Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Two for Interference by Lasarina McMaster, narrated by Ramona Master and Christopher Anthony. Chapter 1. Cleo. Unknown number. You left your bra here. Cleo's best friend Molly snorted over her shoulder. Cleo clutched the phone against her chest, cheeks on fire. Too late! I saw it! But I know for sure that message wasn't meant for you. Molly snapped the bra strap on her shoulder. You're wearing your regular Tuesday bra, and even if by some miracle you were possessed by a demon long enough to let your hair down for a hookup, there's no way you'd be careless enough to leave your bra behind. You'd break out in hives at the idea of being seen with your girls hanging free. Not to mention, you were here watching Pitch Perfect with Ben and Jerry last night. I don't have a regular Tuesday bra. Cleo reached for the spaghetti strap of her tank, as though it would somehow cover the bra strap in question. Why she was embarrassed by it was anyone's guess. Want to go open your underwear drawer and do a head count? $10 says I'd know whether whoever that is on your phone actually has one of yours or not. In under 5 seconds. Cleo groaned and hung her head. She and Molly had been besties since the first day of Cleo's freshman year over a year ago. They'd met in the library, throwing dirty looks and shushing the same obnoxious group of jocks. Despite Molly being a year older, a beautiful friendship had been born over a mutual respect for the rules, a shared love of the smell of musty old books, and grilled cheese. Cleo placed her phone screen down on the desk. It's a wrong number. I'm just going to ignore it. I have to finish this assignment for tomorrow anyway. It's not even the third week of term, and you're already charging ahead. You can have a little fun sometimes, you know. That's kinda the whole point of college. The whole point of college is to graduate with honors and get a good job. Now, shush. I got shit to do. Cleo shifted her glasses up her nose and slid the end of her pen between her teeth. Her phone chimed again and her finger twitched, itching to flip it over. Was there another installment to be had of the mysterious hashtag bragate she'd found herself in the middle of? Maybe if she stared at it long enough, it would turn over by itself. Maybe he's got her panties, too. What makes you think it's a he? Oh, sweet summer child. Let's go with intuition. Go on. I can tell you're bursting to see if that's him again. I'm giving you permission to take a look. Cleo picked up the phone. Unknown number. I'd drop it off, but I dunno where you live. Are you in the dorms? I know these things are expensive as shit, or I wouldn't have messaged. I know last night was a one-time deal. Unknown number. Why do women pay so much money for such a flimsy piece of fabric? Cleo wrinkled her nose. She'd never been a one-night stand kind of girl. In truth, she'd never really been a dating of any kind sort of girl. Her parents had kept a tight rein on her social life throughout high school. Her two previous boyfriends had never understood her academic drive. Molly elbowed her. One-time deal? Huh? You're a changed woman, Cleo Martinez. I had no idea you'd gotten into the do-em and dump-em game. Next, you'll be telling me you bat for my buy team. You should reply, at least. Tell the poor guy he's written the love of his life's number down wrong. You think he's talking about this campus? Shrugging, Cleo placed the phone back on the table and turned the page of her book. Try as she might to deny it or squash it down, a small part of her yearned to have a normal college experience. But her mom would kill her if she got anything less than exemplary scores in all her classes. Unknown number. Melissa? You know it says red next to your messages, right? Wait, is this your calling card? Like you leave your bra behind so I come running? A sneaky way to make it more than a one-time thing? Woman, answer the man! Jeez! Hold up. You don't think he means Melissa Ross, do you? Cleo must have had a blank face because Molly continued, Cheer squad? Still not ringing any bells? Cleo shook her head. You might actually get to know people if you stepped outside of the library sometimes, you know. You should answer the boy. He seems to want to get rid of that bra as a matter of some urgency. Cleo pinched her lip between her teeth. She needed to concentrate on her assignment. And the persistence of Mr. One Night Stand was not conducive to a quiet work environment. Cleo, sorry, this isn't Melissa. I hope you find your Cinderella soon, though. I can confirm the bra is not mine. See, she could be fun. Bantering with a stranger over text was fun, right? Unknown number. My apologies. This was the number she gave me. The search for the owner of the over-the-shoulder boulder holder continues. Have a good one. Her stomach sank at the closed nature of his reply. It surprised her. Did she want an excuse to talk to a complete stranger? A stranger who'd had a one-night stand the night before, no less? No. She had no time for distractions. She would never become summa cum laude if she let some asshole player take up space in her brain. Focus. That's what she needed. I'm heading out to the party at Beta Kappa Pi. Sure you don't want to come? Molly gave her shoulder a playful shove. I'm good, thanks. Molly giggled. You've reached your fill of excitement for one day. You know where I am if you change your mind. Be safe. Always. Molly waved her rape whistle attached to her keychain and a foil-wrapped condom at Cleo before slipping them into the shallow pockets of her jeans. She left, mumbling to herself about how the patriarchy screwed women over at every turn, even when it came to their clothes. Cleo rolled her neck and a heaviness settled on her chest. Molly was a straight-A student who loved partying. She hadn't failed a single class in her first year. She had plenty of friends, a fun dating life, and still managed to maintain high grades. She had it all. How was it possible for Molly to keep all of the plates spinning, while Cleo had to focus all her energies on succeeding in school? Studying English literature in the University of Minnesota had been Cleo's goal for as long as she could remember. She pursued it with fervor. But the occasional ache in the pit of her stomach made her wonder. Chapter 2. Cleo. Something about the intoxicating smell of knowledge in a library made Cleo giddy. While other college students were out having keg parties or pep rallies, Cleo hunkered down in her favorite quiet space and focused on what she did best. She'd eaten an early dinner in the cafeteria with Molly hours ago, but her BFF had then abandoned her, excited about a date with an uber-hot dude who, she said, must have been born from a line of Greek gods. Cleo's back ached, and the words on the page were blurring together. Call time. Go home. Sleep, and start over in the morning. She reached heavy arms over her head, linked her stiff fingers, and pressed her palms toward the ceiling before packing her books and pens into her backpack. Her parents had sent her a goodnight message in their group chat, and Molly had texted her the address of her date and a picture of his driving license, just in case, but that was it. A pang of something she couldn't quite place volleyed to her heart at the sad state of her social life. She shook it off. School was more important. She sent a text to tell Molly she was homeward bound, said goodnight to the janitor who was already mopping the floor, and started the 20-minute walk home. They lived together in a shared apartment with two girls from Molly's class, Nicola and Kasia. After a year in the dorms, Cleo jumped at the chance to have a little more privacy and a little less chaos and noise around as she studied. The extra space didn't hurt either. Despite the late hour, a group of students lingered around the social sciences building, scrolling through social media on their phones at full volume. They shoved their screens in front of each other's faces when they found something of note to share. Her cheeks seared as she passed Lincoln Scott, who stood chatting to one of his jock friends outside the art history building. She snorted at the irony. Guys like Lincoln weren't art history kind of guys. She was glad it was dark so he couldn't see the embarrassment stamped across her hot cheeks. Clenching her teeth, she forced the mortifying flashbacks of the day they met out of her mind. It was all Molly's fault, wasn't everything? She'd dragged Cleo to the local sex shop, Good Vibes, to buy something for her birthday. As if that wasn't embarrassing enough, Cleo had attempted to flee the scene the second she completed her purchase, running, at warp speed, into a solid wall of abs. Lincoln Scott's abs, to be precise. Hockey player extraordinaire. Well, player of all kinds, if the rumor mill was to be believed. She'd wound up flat on her back. The bag containing her shiny new hot pink vibrator had tumbled from her clutched fist and landed on his foot. Yep, on his foot. And because the universe was out to get her, the box didn't even have the decency to stay inside the bag. The jock knight in hockey armor helped her to her feet before picking up her nightstick. She still had nightmares. And if she was honest with herself, fantasies. She scrunched her eyes closed. The amused look on his face as he lifted the box and held it out to her was so burned into her brain that she was pretty sure not even a dousing with acid could have erased it. Guys like him didn't date girls like her, and it was just as well. She had no time for hot, popular hockey boyfriends who went to frat parties and spent most of their time at the rink. Lincoln Scott was out of her league, and even if he wasn't, she needed someone with something more than a hockey puck between his ears to fall in love with. Lincoln Scott was not relationship material, but he sure was nice to look at. At least 6 feet tall, with broad, strong shoulders, baby blue eyes, and a strong jaw. She had no doubts that he could walk right up to the front door of an agency and bag a modeling contract for whatever company made hockey gear. And those washboard abs. Even through a loose-fitting shirt, hot freaking damn. Glasses-wearing book nerd she might be, but Cleopatra Isabella Martinez was not blind. The man was fine. The snap of a twig broke her thoughts. She pulled her head up, and a shiver bolted down her spine. She never wore headphones when she walked at night, always kept her hands empty in case she was attacked, and stayed focused enough on her surroundings to get home without issue. Thinking about Lincoln, Abs, Scott had taken her somewhere else, somewhere dangerous. She hadn't been aware of the tall guy with wide shoulders and his hood up, walking far enough behind her to seem innocent. But she'd heard enough horror stories of women getting attacked for her survival instincts to kick in. Slipping her arm through the loop of her backpack so it rested on both shoulders, she reached into her back pocket to pull out her phone. She unlocked it and scrolled through her meager list of contacts. Her parents were asleep. Her best friend was busy with Mr. Right Now, and her eye doctor and OBGYN's offices were both closed. Sure, there were some friends she hadn't spoken to since high school on the list, but what would she say? Hi, I know it's been 3 years, but there's a guy wearing a hoodie walking behind me on the street, and I'm paranoid AF that he's going to rape and kill me. Could you keep me company for the 15-minute walk home, please? Right. Like, that wouldn't sound at all insane. She put her phone in her front pocket and kept going. She worried her lips between her teeth as she walked, crossing the street in a bid to put more distance between her and the North Face hoodie. He didn't cross at first, but her stomach clenched when heavy footsteps thudded across the pavement, and he joined her on her side of the street. "Text Molly." She opened her inbox, but instead of sending Molly a text, she clicked on the unknown number of Prince Braming from the night before. What the hell? "Cleo. Hi. So, I know we don't know each other, but as it turns out, I don't have all that many friends. I know, sad, right? Anyway, not the point. I'm walking home, it's dark and kind of creepy, and there's this guy behind me who may, or very well may not, be following me home. I was wondering if you could pretend to text me a bit just until I get home." Cleo. "Unless, of course, you're busy, in which case, never mind. But if a dead body turns up on the news tomorrow, you can brag to all your friends that you knew me before I was famous." Unknown number. Wow. That got dark kind of fast. How will the stalker dude know if I'm pretending to text you rather than actually texting you? "Do you need me to call you?" Unknown number. "I could come walk you home?" Unknown number. "Okay, wait. I don't even know what state you're in, so you could be waiting quite a while for an escort home." Cleo giggled, despite herself, casting another glance at the man over her shoulder. "Cleo, at the risk of escaping the stalker behind me and leading another right to me, I'm in U of Minnesota." Unknown number. "Ditto. Want me to come walk you home?" Fear seized her chest. The only thing worse than the idea of being followed home by a stranger was the idea of dragging some poor guy out of his house to rescue her from nothing more than her overactive imagination. It was why she hadn't messaged Molly. She didn't want to bother her for no reason and end up looking foolish. "Cleo, thanks for the offer, but I could be overreacting." Unknown number. "At least tell me what he's wearing." Cleo. "I can't say I've ever had a guy text to ask me what another man is wearing. This is certainly new territory for me." Her hand flew to her mouth with a hiccuping gasp. "Take it back." A strangled groan escaped from between her fingers. Was she flirting with this guy? At a time like this, she never flirted. She didn't even know how. "Cleo, he's wearing a green, I think, North Face hoodie, jeans, and the whitest sneakers I've ever seen. It's dark out, but I'm still blinded by their brightness. Unknown number. LOL. I can't say I've ever messaged a woman to ask what another man is wearing. Guess this is new ground for both of us. And if he's not stalking you home, we might still need to call the fashion police for crimes against shoes. Cleo. I'm not sure I'm in a position to judge someone else's fashion sense. I spend my life in yoga pants and flats. Unknown number. Nothing sexier than a woman who isn't afraid to live her best life in a pair of yoga pants." Butterflies fluttered in her chest. Could it be? A man on the planet who wasn't preoccupied with a woman's appearance? This guy had to be a catfish. With a wry grin, she changed his name on her phone to the all-too-nice Mr. Bingley, from her favorite book, Pride and Prejudice. She was almost home. A quick check over her shoulder revealed she was alone, and relief snaked its way through her muscles. Her mom always told her you could never be too careful. Better safe than sorry. And Cleo didn't want to be another statistic. Bad things didn't always happen to bad people, and too many rapists wandered the streets, while women were called liars, or told if they had dressed differently, they wouldn't have been attacked. Cleo shuddered and picked up her pace. One of Molly's friends had been raped in her freshman year. The poor girl had to sit in class with her attacker every single day, knowing what he'd done to her. "Mr. Bingley, did he get you? Or did you make it home and, gasp, discard me like yesterday's trash?" Cleo. "Neither. I passed out from shock at the idea there might be a man in existence who doesn't care what women look like. I also changed your name in my phone. Mr. Bingley. To what? You can't just leave it there. Talk about clickbait. Also, I'm glad you weren't murdered. And it's kind of sad you have such a low opinion of men. Many of us don't care about yoga pants. Cleo.
Mr. Bingley.
As she approached her door, she tucked her phone in her pocket. She dug her key out of her backpack before making her way up to her room. Dropping her bag to the floor, she filled and turned on her mini kettle. She needed some decaf tea to help calm her nerves after the walk home. She'd been half convinced she was going to die. She pulled out her mug and dropped in a tea bag before sitting cross-legged on the floor to check her messages while the water boiled. Mr. Bingley,
you're kidding, right?
That bumbling idiot Bingley? I'm low-key offended right now. Post-pride Darcy. That's what I should be under in your phone.
Cleo. Okay, now I definitely call bullshit. There isn't a man alive who loves Pride and Prejudice enough to know who either of those dudes are, never mind both.
I'm home, by the way. And I appreciate you escorting me home, even from a distance.
Mr. Bingley. I have two sisters. Each of them prefers a different version. So I spent no less than 65% of my teenage years being subjected to countless reruns of both the BBC version and the Keira Knightley version.
Cleo. And which did you prefer?
Mr. Bingley. A loaded question if ever I heard one. I feel like the fate of our very early day friendship might be hanging in the balance here. But I do, in fact, have strong opinions on which Darcy is better, and I won't change them for any woman, no matter how charming she might be.
She tapped on her chin as the dots danced on her screen, indicating he was typing. Wait, did he just say I was charming? A smile tugged at the corner of her lips, and warmth seeped into her chest. People thought her aloof, intimidating and intense, never charming. This was a first, and she wasn't quite sure what to do with it.
Mr. Bingley.
Colin Firth. Her smile grew.
Cleo. Whew.
For a moment, I thought I was going to have to delete your number from my phone and never talk to you again.
Your answer is correct. Colin is the only Darcy. She pulled up his contact info and changed his name to Mr. Darcy, before dropping Molly a text to let her know she was home in one piece and to make sure Molly didn't need rescuing.
Mr. Darcy. Phew, indeed.
Glad you're home safe and sound. Feel free to hit me up anytime you need someone to pretend to text you on your way home. Molly burst through the door in a blur of curse words and stilettos. For someone who spent more time than should be considered socially acceptable in oversized sports jerseys, yelling at referees from the stands, the girl could rock a cocktail dress and killer heels like no other.
Do I want to know why you're sitting on the floor?
I got distracted. Tea? Molly scrunched up her face.
Is it coffee-flavored tea?
That doesn't even sound good. Date go well? Cleo pulled herself to standing and poured the boiled water into her cup. Her friend sighed and flopped face down onto her bed, mumbling something obscured by the face full of pillow.
That good, huh? I mean, it was fine, but he didn't get my pulse racing, you know?
Translation, he wasn't Finn. Molly had had a crush on her big brother's best friend Finn since before Cleo met her. Nothing had ever happened between them and never could. But Molly spent her time trying to find a guy who made her laugh like he did. He was her yardstick, the one everyone else failed to stack up against, the one she'd steal glances at when she thought no one else could see. Molly had it bad.
Wait, why are you so smiley?
Oh, God. I'm always this smiley. Her friend's snort made her stomach drop.
Did you break out the pink nightsaber? Is that what this is?
Post-screaming-oh smiling? Cleo groaned. No, some dude was following me on the way home. At least, I kind of thought he was. My parents were already asleep and you were out with Jericho or whatever his name is.
We need to get you more friends, girl. So what did you do?
Cleo turned her back to Molly so she wouldn't see her blush. She stirred her tea, plucked the tea bag out by the string, and wrapped it around her spoon to squeeze a last bit of flavor into her mug before discarding it in the trash. She dropped a splash of milk into her cup, like her aunt's British husband taught her, before putting the milk back in the fridge. Cleo? Yeah? Did you call anyone to walk you home? Not exactly. She picked up the spoon and gave her tea another stir. You've stirred it already. Molly grabbed her arm and turned her face on. What gives? Cleo sipped her tea, keeping her eyes cast to the ground. I messaged the randomer from yesterday. Who? Molly tilted her head and pursed her lips. Wait, the bra guy? Her eyebrows shot up her forehead and her voice climbed an octave or two. Cleo nodded. You didn't. Cleo nodded again. Of all the people in the world to text, you pick a guy you don't know to save you from another guy you don't know? I mean, for a smart girl, you sure do make questionable decisions sometimes. Is he even in Minnesota? He is. I still don't know his name, but he's here at the U. He didn't need to come rescue me, but we texted a bit. Cleo held her breath. Surely that would be the end of the questions. Maybe if she didn't move, blink, or breathe, Molly would forget she was even there and move on to the next thing. You like him? No such luck. I don't know him. I can't like him. Her defiant stomach flipped. You might want to tell your face that, Cleo, because your face says you might have a teeny little crush on the boy living in your phone.
Chapter 3. Lincoln. Sweat trickled down Lincoln's neck as he took the stairs two at a time up to his dorm. His legs burned and his shoulders ached, but in all the best ways. The only thing better than a rush of endorphins from working out was the rush of endorphins from a hockey game. Well, that and the rush of endorphins that came from doing a different kind of exercise with a beautiful woman. Another run? His roommate and best friend, Russ, handed him a chilled bottle of water as he entered the room. Russ's 2-year-old daughter was at his parents' house off campus. While they technically lived together, Russ split his time between the dorms and his folks' place. How he managed being a dad, school, and playing hockey, Link would never know. The guy was a machine. Nah, Link twisted the top off and took a few gulps. Not by design, anyway. Got chased down the street by a T-Rex. He raised his bottle in salute to Russ before downing what was left, crushing the bottle like an accordion and throwing it at the trash can across the room. He missed. Know how I know you love me, man? When you get all up in your sarcastic prickness, Russ winked. No, really, it's totes adorbs. Where do you get the energy from? I can barely keep up with coach's daily workouts and practices, and here you are looking like... Well, he gestured an open hand from Link's head to his feet. Fresh as a daisy after doing your second extra run of the week. Third. Link picked up the bottle and threw it in the trash can. Hashtag humblebrag. He pulled his shirt over his head, rolled it into a ball, and dropped it at his feet. And some of us have to actually work on the ice, you know? We don't all just cruise along the blue line waiting for the puck to come at us. Not to mention, gotta keep in shape for the ladies. He slid his hand over his sweaty torso. They like the abs. Russ snorted. What ladies? You haven't been on a date in... I don't know how long. It's only been days. Link tugged off his socks and shorts, dropping them on top of the t-shirt on the floor. His phone chimed. He crossed the small space and unplugged his phone from the charger next to his bed. You didn't even take your phone? What kind of weirdo doesn't listen to music, or at least podcasts, while they run? Link shrugged as he unlocked his phone. It was dead.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?